Thank you, and good morning. I'm going to give a talk that I don't totally know if it belongs in a pedology session. I'm not going to talk a lot about pedology specifically. Instead, what I'm going to talk about is a collection of methods that we are applying in a project at University of Idaho to perform, in this case it's a pedology project, but to perform open science projects within academia. So the talk is titled An Open Science Approach to Soil Carbon Mapping. And first I want to talk briefly about what exactly open science is, what do I mean by that? And specifically what I mean is science in which we publish not just a paper at the end of whatever work precedes the paper, but we also publish whatever data that we collect during the data collection phase, whatever computer code we generate to process and analyze the data, the outputs that we generate using the computer code, basically anything that goes into producing the output products that we use to write the paper, we want to publish all of that material because it allows us to, as a scientific community, it allows us to have science that is more open. And when I say open, I mean that we're doing work that's more verifiable than if the methods are opaque or only described in the typically oblique way that we find in papers. It's more reproducible. In other words, if somebody else in the community wanted to reproduce our results, they could collect our input data, our computer code, and our outputs, and they could run through the same process that we went through to produce our outputs, and they could verify that, yes, they can reproduce our methods. And it opens our methods to closer scrutiny and more critique, because people can specifically look at our code and say, but wait, I think there's something wrong here. It gives us the opportunity to, I think, correct science and our scientific methods more thoroughly over time. And finally, open science methods tend to be reusable. So if someone else is, or we in the future are interested in applying our same methods to a different project, it's not a huge burden to be able to get the necessary, input data, computer code, that kind of thing, to go ahead and reuse the methodology for another area or for another time or that kind of thing. So briefly, the process that we're going through specifically. Well, I guess this isn't very specific, but it'll get more specific in a moment. But we start out with a data input and pre-processing phase. So we've collected the data, and in this case, the data that we're using are data that we didn't go out into the field and get. We're using data from places like NRCS and USGS and local soil science cooperatives, those kinds of other groups. So they've collected these data over a long period of time. And they've collected them using different methods, and they've collected them in different formats, and so forth. So in order to make all those data work together, we need to do a certain amount of pre-processing on them to get them into a situation where they work together. And the seems like the popular word these days for describing that is data harmonization. So we use an extract transform load process to extract data from where it sits, to transform it so that it fits together in some way, and then load it into our own database that we will use to commence with the project. And then we have a model. In this case, we're trying to talk about soil organic carbon concentration. How much organic carbon is there in the soil across space? So we've built a model that takes the input data and produces a map. And then there's a result validation step where we use cross-validation to check to make sure that our model is making good predictions for locations where we already have measured soil carbon levels. And then we have our output products, which can include things like the, as I say, we want to publish everything, so we're going to output the extract transform load scripts. We're going to output the model code. And then we output raster data, which may include the validation products, you know, the diagnostic products for the model, as well as whatever the actual map was that the model produced. So this is just a quick slide about the extract transform load process. We go through and we use different simple tools to connect to internet sources for our soils data, like say NCSS, REACH, NRCS, USGS. Those kinds of places. REACH, by the way, is the grant program that I work on. So there are a certain number of people who have sampled soil for our project. So we extract those data over the internet from many databases, and we transform them and load them into one database. And then we can schedule extractions for periodic updates if, for example, the REACH soil sampling is an ongoing process, so we would like to, over time, as we rerun the model, we would like to include newer data within our model inputs. So model execution. So we have our model is based on a distributed stochastic gradient boosting method. So it's a kind of a machine learning method. It's based on a decision tree model. And the idea of the distributed gradient boosting model is that it can run in parallel on many different computers at the same time. So we can invoke the Amazon Elastic Compute Cloud is one that we're using. It doesn't have to be that one, but it's a convenient one, which can take advantage of code that we've written, for example, in Python or in R, to run our gradient boosting model in a distributed way, so it runs on many processors, so it tends to be fairly quick. And then we go through the result validation process where we cross-validate model outputs against some ground truth data. So we hold back a certain number of the samples as we input samples into the model. We hold back a certain number of the samples and then we compare those samples against the model outputs. So then we produce a map product, basically, that expresses areas where the modeled soil carbon values are have some amount of departure from the actual values that are measured. And so we end up with kind of a heat map that shows these are areas where the model has done poorly, and these are areas where the model has done well. And then we also use the sample points to compute a sample density raster so that we can look, it's another kind of visual diagnostic product that allows us to look and see where do we have a lot of samples, where do we have a few samples. We can animate that raster product to show us where samples are occurring over time. And how our distribution across the landscape is changing. So output products. As I say, we're going to output our input data and our ETL scripts. We're going to output our model code. The output data that came from the model code is another output product. All of the diagnostic products that we generate, so the raster products showing departure from ground truth and the sample density maps are output products. Visualizations and other derived products. So when we turn the output data into a map, those kinds of products get output. And then the publication. Whatever paper or papers that we write about the process, you know, typically they're going to be published in some journal. We will also attempt to have, as best we can, some kind of preprint or, you know, some kind of version of the publication, or ideally, I guess, we would be publishing our results in an open source journal, but that's not always possible. Another note about all of this open publishing, it's great when people make things like computer code and data available over the internet online. One thing that is often overlooked when people do that is explicit licensing. So using some identifiable and explicit license is important because it reserves the rights of the authors, and it also clearly expresses the rights of other people when they start to try to use that data or that computer code. So in our case, we use a Creative Commons license called CC BY SA, which is their shorthand for what they call an attribution share alike license. And all that means is that other people are free to use our data and our computer code as long as they attribute it to us at some point. In other words, they have to make some citation or some reference and say, hey, we got these data or we got this code from these guys at U of I. And the share alike stipulation says also when they do some, when they make use of our products, that they should also be making those results open and public as well. We use Creative Commons, but there are many other kinds of licenses out there. Some people write their own. Some people just announce, hey, these data or this computer code is now part of the public domain, so anyone can use it without any restriction. There are other licenses, including the new public license and the BSD license from Berkeley and the Apache license. So the list goes on. So when we move to the publication and archive step, what I mean by that is we want to build a sort of a publication package, and we want to deposit that publication package into an archive so that it makes it convenient for other people to get at. So the first step in that is that we organize all of our output products, our scripts, our inputs, our model code outputs, products, and the license that we include in there. We bundle all that together, and we develop a metadata record that describes what's in that package. And there are many metadata standards, especially for geospatial data. So we tend to use, in our shop, we tend to use the ISO, the International Standards Organization standard, but there are many other standards that you can use. And then we deposit the archival package in a public repository. So we have a repository at the University of Idaho, but there are also other more distributed repositories, things like Figshare and Data Dryad and Data One. These projects all allow you to deposit data and have it shared across a wider geographic extent, you know, provides a little bit more visibility for your products. And then data access. So we try to adhere to what's called the FAIR principles of data access. FAIR stands for find, access, interoperate, reuse. So in order to enable those four parts of the access policy, we set up this metadata record, which allows people on the internet to be able to search for our data using keywords and locations and that kind of thing. And then we set up data services using software like Threads or the Open Geospatial Consortium's services that provides data access. We also allow people to just download the entire package, but there are various access methods. The standards that we use, the data access standards and the metadata standards, provide a certain implication of interoperability that people can rely on a certain predictability of the way that our system will function based upon the standards, which helps to enhance interoperability. And then when it comes to data reuse, you know, we've explicitly made the data available and licensed it for reuse to encourage that kind of activity. So altogether, it's, as I say, this is not exactly a pedology talk. I'm not talking about exactly how we did what we did with the soil, but how we deal with what we've done afterward, and how we make that available, and how we share that data and those other products with the rest of the community to try to make science work faster and better. So, and I'd like to thank the USDA, NIFA, and other various sponsors for helping me out with this part of my dissertation.
Thank you very much. We do have time for a question or two, if they're out there. Yes.
Yes.
And so part of that is having good metadata and explanations within it.
True.
I was curious, kind of on an open-ended question on your thoughts, or how to you know, transmit code that's easy for everyone falling into.
Well, and we can go a certain distance toward doing that. We don't. I wouldn't say that we go out of our way to make the code easy for everyone. But one of the things that we do is we concentrate on making sure that we document our code at least well enough so that we can understand what we've done. There are countless times when I have come back to a piece of code that I wrote a year or two ago, and I don't even recognize it. It's like I've never seen it before, and I don't know how it works. If I've documented that code, then it's relatively a quick process for me to get back into it and say, oh yeah, I remember what's going on here. So to some level, hopefully that kind of documentation effort helps other people, but there is some limitation that we can't help everyone all the time.